Good evening and greetings in the name of the Lord Jesus. Count it a blessing to be here. Heard of Joy Christian Fellowship, but have never been here. So now I know what Joy Christian Fellowship is. I was giving this assignment and many, how to prepare your children for life and marriage, how not to intervene or control, but let them learn to trust the Lord and each other, and how to raise them to let them go. And maybe I'm not sure what the focus of the subject was for, more child training enabled to let them go, or maybe how grandparents should be let them alone. So I focused a little bit more on maybe on training children to let them go. And I think that if we do that properly, then we can release them in a proper way. And so, but I don't sure. So I'll give you what I have. We have 13 children, and all but two of them are married. So we have 11 married children. We have 77 grandchildren. And at my age, you know, I was never made any splash financially. But when I look at it now at this age, it's the greatest treasure I have. And just today, one daughter lives in Kansas, and she was there. Her husband and her family were there. And there's three married ones in our area there yet. So all four of the families were there for lunch today. And it's special. And I would that everyone could experience that treasure. Can I say it plainly? If you don't do it God's way, you're not going to experience that. We must do it according to what the Lord Jesus Christ teaches us. And it is a beautiful thing. And so I'm going to share this I have it in four different parts. And for clarity, I'm going to call those parents who have children that are married as grandparents. And so if you have children that are married and you're not grandparents yet, I'm sorry, but that's to designate who you are. And you have children, it's time to let them go and release them. I thought about having a really real interview with my children and say, am I doing this right? Am I letting you go the way I should? I just sort of mentioned it briefly. We have a good relationship, and I'll get into that some later as to how to relate on that. And I think that some of the training to let them go, maybe I'll go over that a little quickly. I have a story. I wasn't sure where to fit it in, but I think it illustrates it as well as any. I was working at my son-in-law. Well, what I did want to say that our church has started an outreach in West Virginia, and two of my children went there. We are starting an outreach in Southern Virginia, and my one son's going there. I don't know what that means, if they all want to get away from mom and dad or not. That doesn't sound good on our part, but what was our goal? That they would go out into areas where there's no Mennonite testimony. That was our goal. It's not sad to say. Three of them are in Goshen, Indiana. Now, that's about as bad as Lancaster County, excuse me. But we wanted them to go out and spread the gospel wherever they are. So that's where they're at right now. But no, we're happy for them to go. And as far as I know, we have good relationships. And if I don't hit on your questions, feel free to ask me afterwards. But four areas I was going to talk about. General ideas about relationships and preparing your children to leave. Directions for grandparents and directions for young parents. Also in relating to mom and dad. The most important relationship that you can have, and there's a lot of talk about relationships, and everybody talks about their relationship with Christ. And anybody can say that. When in 1 John he says, if we say we have fellowship with Christ, with him, with Christ, and we walk in darkness, we lie and do not the truth. Fellowship with Christ is an obedient, surrendered life to the Lord Jesus Christ. And then he says, if we walk in the light as he is in the light, we have fellowship one with another. If I walk in the light and you walk in the light, there's just that fellowship that's going to be there. And if I'm walking in the light, as I should, I can have a friendship with many different people in a good way, but not the kind of fellowship that is extremely close relationships in a good way. Relationship with Christ is first. Your relationship with your mom and dad is extremely important and sort of foundational for all relationships. If you can't relate to mom and dad in a proper way, then all other relationships are going to be stilted by that one. Ill will, bitterness, unforgiveness will destroy you, and it will not bring And as I looked at this title, How to Let Your Children Go and Not Intervene into Their Lives, I wondered if that was a cry from some young parents, they left me alone. I wasn't sure if that's where this plea is coming from. But I preached this sermon at St. Thomas, and as I pondered some of this more, it came through to me in a clearer way as to how some of that should be. But and I'll talk about that. But I don't know. Yeah, most moms and dads have made mistakes. I mean, I made plenty of mistakes. And how about your mom and dad? Did they make mistakes? And if you haven't yet forgiven them, or you still have ill will, I read an article about a man that was estranged from his father for 14 years, and it's just his father wants nothing to do with him. It's a pain way down in here that you cannot heal. It's hard to heal, and it's just difficult. And so that's probably the father's problem. And I'll get to that a little later also. But my dad has been gone for 10 years. My mom has been gone about 6 or 7 years. They're dead and gone. But if, in fact, there is something in my relationship with my mom and dad that's still niggling at me, and I have not laid that down, that's number one. Start right there. If you have an attitude towards your mom and dad, get over that. I mean, not get over it. Commit it to Christ. And if your mom and dad don't love you at all, you still have to forgive them. You still have to, if they're all wrong, you still have to forgive them. I wanted to tell you that story. I was over at my son-in-law's fixing his lawnmower for him. My son-in-law wasn't there. And the neighbor man walked over, and I don't know if he was. I thought he was a little bit old, maybe a bit senile. He didn't seem too sharp. And he was there complaining about his children. They didn't treat him right. And he kept on and on. And it was not kind of me to say it, but I just said, who raised those children anyhow? And it sort of backed him up. And he didn't say much, and I didn't know if he caught it. But later, my son-in-law said, my neighbor told me, your father-in-law told me, who raised those children anyhow? So, you know, who raised those children anyhow? Let's raise them up to love the Lord Jesus Christ in life. There is authority and there is submission. Okay, so here you have a rebellious son, and he won't listen to dad. And he says that dad is harsh and mean. So, are you going to be a judge on this whole situation as to whose problem is it? Follow what I'm saying? Can you control the authorities in your life? Not really. You don't control who your mom and dad were. And now if you're under a church authority, maybe you can get out from under that authority. Your wives, you're under your husband's authority. You chose that a long time ago. What I want you to understand is the powerful weapon that you have and the thing that's extremely important in your life is the submission. When you're under wrong authority, it's not comfortable. It's not kind. But the finest thing you can do in life is learn to bend your will. Submit. Just bend it. The finest thing that could ever happen in your life is that God brings you to a crisis in your life where you're said, I'm just done. I can't do this anymore. I give up. I give it to the Lord. That is the finest place to be. We're not in a society that says submission is powerful, submission is good. My wife says I should put on my Google Maps the voice. I said, I don't want anybody bossing me around. I can't handle that. Don't tell me where to go, you know. That's how we're geared. Don't boss me around. I'll be my own self. And the more you can learn to just surrender and give up and hear what other people say, it's a beautiful thing. I think of the Laodicean church. They were rich and increased with goods, and they had need of nothing. We don't need anybody to tell us what to do. And it's the arrogancy of our time somewhat. There are different personalities. This is, again, in relationships. I work fix appliances. I meet all kinds of people. Do you ever meet the person that will always tell you your shoes untied, you know, or, you know, and then I have these people that tell me, you need a pad for your knees or you're going to hurt your knees, and I feel like saying, you're not my mother. Just be quiet. You know, these old grandmas that want to give you all this good advice. The next person won't say anything. And I don't know what your personality is. Some people's personality is just more like that, you know? And if yours is like that as a grandparent, you got to be careful that you're just not managing everybody. Careful with that kind. That's part of understanding relationships. Some people are just like that. It's okay. Go ahead. Tell me. Whatever. Years ago, I learned this, that in the church, there are people that have the gift of prophecy. They see things black and white, no gray areas. And when I was taught this particular gift, it says they are not well liked in the church because a lot of times they can explain it black and white, but they can't live up to it. And what I'm trying to say is the different kinds of people, black and white, they are the most valuable person probably in your church, the person that can say, this is right and this is wrong. I'm just talking about relationships and how to relate to each other. Okay, let's talk about preparing children for life. And I'm going to try to summarize this quickly. And our goal is to let them go. I'm going to give you an overall view so as to be able to catch this idea. But basic idea in child training has been parents that... Okay. They give them everything they want as little children and let them do what they want. Let me start it this way. It is a philosophy in our society that children have to learn by just experiment, just by... it's a philosophy, don't force them to do anything. Young parents, command your children. I'm getting a little ahead of myself. I'm trying to summarize this quickly so I can get over it. I don't know when I started. I'll try not to keep you too late. I want you to catch the point, though. If you can command your children, let me tell you a story. This will explain it better than anything. I was in a house fixing appliances, and it wasn't early. It was like 9 o'clock, maybe 9:30, and this little girl got up, and the mother wanted to get her something to eat. Do you want this? No. Do you want this? No. She offered her everything in the pantry. Well, do you want this? No. I was about ready to say, give that child what she needs and be done with it, and we'll be happy and we'll be at rest and know that it just went on and on. Here, I want you to just command your children. Give them what they need, not what they want, and you will give them a sense of security and well-being and rest in the home. Just, this is what you need. This is what you good. As they grow older, and they become responsible, you release them to their own decisions. And everybody gets that backwards. They want to give their children everything to make them happy, that they will like you as a parent. No, they'll hate you as a parent. Tell them this is what you need to do. They want that security. And when you get older, they release them. Here's what happens. They give them everything they want And then when they start misbehaving at 12, 13, then you start cranking down on them. No, crank down on them, teach them, pattern them how they should walk, and then release them. That thing is the same way. I'll get to that later, but I'm going to say it now when I'm thinking about it. Your daughter gets married. We'll pick on the women. And she's always been mama's little girl, you know. And mama has always given her everything she wants. And she's just been pampered the whole way up through. And she gets married. And all at once the husband says, no, we're not doing that. And she goes crying home to mama. And mama says, oh, that's mean. I should not treat her like that. Follow what I'm saying? We're fixing them up to release them. And I'm ahead of my game a little bit, but that's part of the problem there. If you can understand what I'm saying, the principle is in John 13, verse 7, where Jesus was washing their feet, and he said, you don't understand what I'm doing to you now, but afterwards you will. When you command your children, you give them clear direction, clear design as to how they live. They're not going to always like it when you have them eat their spinach and they want to eat candy and pretzels and chips, okay? Just to exaggerate a little. We didn't make our children eat spinach. We made them eat food. I can't go into all the child training. But, and then release them, and you've taught them the real values of life. And that's in a nutshell what I'm talking about. How many of you read this book? It came in the mail about 2 weeks ago. It's called Amber Alert. And I want to, this is just for young parents to get a hold of this whole thing. That's the first point. Get serious about life. Get serious about what's happening now when you're young. Your children, those sweet little children, they need some correction. They need some discipline. You got to teach them. This man did a survey, and this is what he wrote, if I can find it. I grabbed this at the last minute. Last year, a member of Beach Amish Church in the heart of one of our major Mennonite communities conducted a survey of the local churches in his constituency to discover the retention rate of their youth to conservative Anabaptist faith. Conservative Anabaptist faith defined as those that still practice nonconformity in dress and holiness in life. He discovered that the retention rate for 1980 to 1990 was 55% for ministers' children and 45% for laity. That means that 55% of laity children and 45% of ministers' children left the church. And he asked, why? Why? An assessment was made of the conservative Mennonite churches of the same community in the 1958-1978 era. I was born in 55, so that had been about my era, revealing that of over 300 youth that were born in the 1958 to 1978 era, the retention rate stood at 28%. That's how many people stayed with the Anabaptist church, and 30% for the ministry, with a total of 84 out of 300 youth staying in the conservative Anabaptist church. The survey revealed some ministers retained most of their children, while others had a retention rate of zero. Why? Why? We have the gospel. We have the message of Jesus Christ. Why can't we communicate that to our children? If tonight here you have children that have gone wayward and are out in the world, that's extremely painful. And I'm not trying to stir up more pain and more difficulty in this whole thing. The message that you young people need to hear is, wake up now. What are you aiming for? What are your goals for your children? You want them to walk with the Lord Jesus Christ. And again, you're not going to have a relationship with them if they've gone out in the world. And one of the things I want you to catch is this. I have seen too often that parents with children are getting rebellious, and they're not, the church is trying to help them. The parents will leave right with the children. Listen, if you can't do anything else, stand firm on the truth. You can't, somehow they want to keep that relationship with their children. Don't do it. The finest thing you can do for your children is stand firm and say, this is the truth, and not waver. Grandparents, when your married children are going the wrong direction, stand firm. Don't move off of where you're, of the truth of the gospel. I want to read one other thing to you yet. There are parents that do care. I've seen many aged parents weeping. Many have shared with me that all they had accomplished in life turned to dust in comparison with the loss of their children. Get a hold of that. All of a sudden, all your success in life, if you're a businessman that's very, very successful, and you lose your children, you've lost everything. You don't have anything for Christ's kingdom. You don't have anything to die for, to have lived for, pass on a legacy. Many parents who have experienced abductions have cried and prayed for years, hoping to retrieve those children. Some have awakened too late, unable to change the course set. And as one minister said to me last week with sadness written on his face, I wish I had started thinking more proactively about raising my children 25 years ago. And I wonder how many older people wish they'd have gotten serious in life. I have several of these books, and I'd like for some of you to read them and maybe pass them around. And I'm going to try to move on here with these things. I'm going to go quickly over these points and not make many comments on love your children. This is preparing them for to let them go. Love your children. The greatest need in all of our lives is to feel love. If mom and dad don't love us, who will love us? Love your children. It gives them a sense of security, a sense of well-being. Respect your children. I don't know how to enlarge on that. But if you love them, you want them, and to give them respect is you're glad to have them. You'll correct them when they need it corrected. If you have respect for them, they will respect the ones that love them and respect them. They're not just there. Too often they're in the way of what I want to do. If you have 13 children, how often do you think you go eat out? You don't go eat out. The pocketbook won't handle it. And they learn a lifestyle. And that was slipped in there. Command your children. I talked about that. Teach them right and wrong. This is right. This is wrong. The world wants to smear everything together. They teach them. Everyone is a victim these days. Everybody operates on feelings and emotion. No. Give them what they need. They'll teach them the law of sowing and reaping. If you do this, this will happen. And that's just part simple fact of when you correct with correction, they understand, no, that's not acceptable. This is acceptable. Teach them that. So to the flesh, it's going to reap bitterness. Teach them to love Christ and hate the world. You've got to get that across to them. And one of the problems is we don't understand what the world is. And I could go on for another half hour on that one. There are too many old people, and this is my basic child training session, is they will become, just what you are. There are too many people that love the world, but they have a form that they are Christian. And in their hearts, they're loving the world. And your children will grab and get a hold of what you really are, not even what you say you are, but they'll catch. They will catch the real you. And if you act like one thing at home and another thing at church, that sours them, okay? And they won't respect you, and they won't love you, and they won't say, yeah, honor mom and dad. That was, I think, I've repeated this. I think too often I preach this in every sermon. But this was the thing that counted for me. This is the thing that gave me solid footing. 1 John 2:15, love not the world, neither the things that are in the world. For all that is in the world, the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eye, and the pride of life, they are not of the Father, but of the world. And if we could get a hold of those three things, that's been my outline for life, you know, the lust of the flesh. Adultery, fornication, lasciviousness, uncleanness. Is that plain enough for you? Can you get a hold of that? Fathers that have not guarded their hearts, their thoughts, and their eyes, and then they want their children to be pure and holy. Come on, where are we at, fathers? Listen, modesty. Modesty is so important, and somehow it's gone out the window. I can't believe sometimes older people toss off that whole issue. The lust of the eye, wealth. It's ingrained in us, right? To get that money. We don't want our children to be covetous, right? We'll not talk a lot. Lust of the eye. The pride of life. To be superior to others. To be the best. To be honorable. To have people think you're great. Preparing them for life. Can you imagine entering into marriage with that kind of competition to be superior, to be the best? Love the truth, hate the world, be honest with the truth, teach them to be honest. Be joyful in your home, be thankful, restful, and peaceful. And I need to tell you a story about a young man. This is what he told me. He was from a very conservative group, and him and some boys decided they were going to go to a ball game. He said, I went there, and he said, it was exciting. It was, you know, just probably a homeboy, farm boy. I don't know what he was. Yeah, he was a farmer. But to get out into that whole realm of the yelling and the clapping and the whole excitement of whatever goes on in ball games, it was thrilling. But he said, when I came home, Mom and Dad were sitting there in the quiet of the living room, and Dad was reading his Bible. And I knew, even though that was a thrill, I wanted this quiet, peaceful home. If your home is full of tension and bickering and fighting, they'll want out of that home as fast as they can. They want nothing to do with what Mom and Dad have. They want nothing to do with that. You've got to demonstrate the joy of the Lord. If Mom and Dad are grouches all the time and ever complaining about everything, it's not going to impress them. This is godliness and this is Christianity. He said he went another time. He said all along, I knew I wanted what they have. The world is attractive. It is appealing. It touches our senses and we want it. It's exciting. Somehow we have to let them know that the real joy and the real happiness in life is just giving up. I want what Christ has for me. I'm convinced of it. And the children will know whether you're convinced that Christ is the answer to the whole thing. And you want to convince them. You want to prepare them to be able to let them go. Here's what it is when they're ready to let. They need to learn. I said about releasing them to their own decision. You want them to learn. You control them to the point where you can slowly give them up. And you want to release them to Christ the Lord. You want them to the Lordship of Christ. You want them to know what it is to walk in the Spirit. And when you see them walking in the Spirit, then you can release them. We always like for our children, when they got old enough and mature enough, to let them go off into a VS. And we liked Faith Mission Home. That's where a lot of them went. We like them to go out on their own, get away from Mom and Dad's control, and see how they do. And we still have some strings attached yet before we let them go for marriage. That was some of our thinking. Here's what it is. When they learn to walk in the Spirit, when your young man can say, now that was a lustful thought, a lustful look, I don't want anything to do with it. That's walking in the Spirit. That was a covetous thought. I don't want anything to do with it. I reject it. I refuse it. That was a waste of money. That was for my own pleasure. It's wrong. I wish I would not have done that. That was a selfish of me to do that. I'm sorry. That was jealousy and envy. I don't want that in my life. I was dishonest about my motives. That was my anger and frustration. I reject that. I don't want that in my life. That was my wounded pride that I reacted like that. That's where our children should be. How many of you are ready for marriage, you know? Maybe some of us older ones aren't ready for marriage. But when you, yourself, under the lordship of Christ, are saying, Lord, I want what you want. And I'm not talking about perfection. Some of us older ones, when I look back where I was as a young man, I don't think I was ready for marriage. But I did grow. And when you have a child that's not growing right, you get concerned. We want our young people to be on their own saying, Lord, when we can see that, when you can see them saying, yes, I want to. We have sometimes, I'm really getting off track now, but have produced a generation of people that say, I can't do this and I can't do that and I can't do that because mom and dad say I can't and the church says I can't. Where are the people who are saying, this is what Christ wants me to do, this is what I want to do, rather than taking that, I can't, I can't, I can't. We need to get a hold of that. The Lordship of Jesus Christ is a beautiful thing, beautiful relations, and wonderful. Let's move on. Philippians 2:12, yet wherefore, my dearly beloved, as you have always obeyed, not as in my presence only, but now much more in my absence. And what he was simply saying, you're behaving yourself not when I'm around, not when the bishop's there, not when mom and dad's there. You are behaving yourself in an orderly, proper way when nobody's seeing you. This is integrity. And there's times even on your job when nobody's around. Doesn't matter if you don't put those extra screws back in the appliance. You do it because of integrity before God, before Christ. That's what we want. Okay, responsibilities of grandparents in letting go. I'm going to talk to grandparents. Where am I at? I missed that whole thing, but I'll talk about it. Okay. The one thing that came through to me and helped me to understand, maybe, I don't think Vivian and I are like this, but I had a neighbor, and he was one of those domineering personalities. He just would possess you. It was just too much. Just, boom, you're not doing everything right. And I almost did not even want to ask him a question about anything because you got the whole load. And it was just that oppressive personality. So I understand from that point. See, my dad was not like that. He was probably, could have been a little more aggressive in telling me. When I think about, I started the home farm. I mean, I was on the farm where he left and left me take over. And I imagine he scratched his head many times at my careless ways and the way I acted and stuff. But he didn't say much at all. Now, my father-in-law, he was more of the black and white guy. And when I think about my experience with my father-in-law, my dad, I never once resented my father-in-law or my dad. I don't know. So I can't relate to that part of it because I highly respected my father-in-law and what he had to say. But this neighbor was right there constantly, so I know what it is to feel oppressed, but it wasn't even my dad. So I'm going to share some of these things of what I see sometimes as extra pressure. When your son or daughter gets married, your son or daughter gets married. Okay, so they have a new partner, a new home, and they come from different backgrounds, different families. They are working through differences, right? Did any of you not have to work through differences with your new wife or your new husband, you got to give them some time to work it through. And if, you know, the mother-in-law jokes, the mother-in-law steps in and is always there, you're not doing this right, you're not doing that right. You put pressure on it to fix them. And I mentioned that about when the daughter comes home to mom. Mom should say, you go back and you submit under your husband. And be quiet on the whole thing. You know, sometimes dads, I mean, I was glad that my daughters respected me. They wanted to know what I thought. And sometimes if their husband maybe wasn't doing what he should, he'd come home the good old dad. No, you go back and you submit under your husband. He is your authority now. If he wants my advice, he can come to me and ask me. And so that's one way that grandparents should not interfere. And I just wrote some things down. And probably if you're living close to your parents or in-laws, you know, maybe you're not keeping after the flower gardens the way they should, you know. If they're living in the home where you came from and all my flower gardens are getting weedy, well, what's wrong here? I mean, is she lazy or what's going on, you know? Doesn't matter. One of the things in life, you need to learn what counts and what doesn't count, okay? Flower gardens are not eternal. Get off of that. Maybe she can't make pies or cook like you did. Maybe she's not a very good cook. Does it matter? No. Maybe she doesn't clean right. I don't know if I'm in Lancaster County or not, but I have to put my little digs in. And that's fine. I mean, I'll never forget. Oh, I shouldn't even tell that story. I'm getting late already. Reuben. Can't even think of his name now, from Faith Mission Home. He married a girl that came from Lancaster County. I shouldn't even started on this one. He said, out there, we didn't mow around our mailboxes, and she did, you know. So she was coming out to Minnesota. So if you get a husband from Minnesota or maybe Iowa, or maybe Franklin County, and he's not as particular as what you grew up with. Doesn't matter. Just back off. Let them develop their own where they're at. Don't pick at them. Okay? Let them learn that. They can develop that on their own. These things aren't number one. Be careful. Maybe their clothes and their shoes aren't quite as tidy as what they should be. Maybe he's a bit lazy, he's not as aggressive, he doesn't work, he's not business-minded, he can't think right. His poor son-in-law, you know, what are we going to do with him? Don't nag and fuss them, let them learn. That's where, you know, you can build resentment and it's not profitable. What counts and what doesn't count. This is what I'd like for you to get a hold of, though. We have three married children there in our church, okay? So, and this is going to throw the wrench the other way. I love my church family. I feel responsible to tell them whenever I think they're not doing what's right. I love my church family, but I love my children more. Is it okay if I love them more than my church family? Is it okay if when I see them not living right, that I can tell them? I'm going to, okay? When I'm concerned. And again, I need to be careful as to my concerns, that I'm not nagging and picking. And I know this is what I want you to know, that if I can drop it quietly to them, and if I feel resentment and back off, then I back off and I pray. Okay? You pray hard. And I want you to know, and I'm going to talk to that on the end. I got to hurry along here. This is a new thought to me, and I'm still pondering, but I'll throw it out anyhow. In your church relationships, build capital. You ever hear that term? It's a new term that's coming up. Build good relationships where you love each other, you're kind to each other, and then when a problem comes up, you've got capital to spend. And to me, I've always said to those in the church that if you're struggling with something and you need someone to counsel you, go to your closest friend, this person you feel like will understand you, okay? And it, to me, the finest delight would be that my sons and daughters, or my sons, my daughters should go to their husband, or, you know, my sons and my son-in-laws would be able to talk to me about certain issues. What do you think, Dad? What do you think about this thing? That would be my delight. And that's what I would call a good relationship. We want that kind of relationships in our churches. And I said, it is hard for us older ones when we see apostasy. I did a job. I'm sorry. I am getting too long again. I had a customer, and I went there. She was from a conservative Mennonite church, not our church. Not, yeah, okay. I saw her maybe once a year or every other year when her appliance would break down. And I just saw her going from a nice, modest dress to a tube dress to skirts and blouses to short dresses to the covering going off until it disappeared. And the dress, I won't even describe it. And I watched her just go, whoom. That's heartbreaking. That hurts. If you younger ones knew what we... I'm going to get to that later. I'm getting ahead of myself. But I want to know... here, one thing about apostasy. Don't take general slaps at your children. You know, you're horrible at child training. Don't do that. Tell them what they need to do. What I've seen in most parents, and maybe in my own life, was... we did not follow through with our commands. You command something and let it go. Tell them in particular what you're seeing is a problem. Okay, so much for the apostasy, and I'll get to that later too. But listen, here is where I am at with my children. I hope I don't ever have to see it. But there are some things that are absolute. Okay? Divorced and remarried. I'm going to walk up to my children. You're wrong. Now, I don't think I have to keep nagging them. They need to know this is unscriptural, this is dead wrong, and I won't have anything to do with it. And I don't have all the explanation of how you do with families and that kind of thing. If the wife decides that she's going to throw off her covering, I'm going to tell them, you're wrong. We're not going to play games with this thing. I'm not interested in trying to keep a fuzzy, happy relationship. It's not happening. I believe what Scripture says. I believe what Christ says. And you're wrong. Our relationship is not going to be what it's not going to be a happy relationship. You're wrong. Stand firm on the truth. You won't help them by going with them. You won't help that relationship. If they're leaving Christ and you're leaving Christ, in our world, relationships are shot because they don't know the Prince of Peace. They don't know Christ. Let me give you some instructions for young people, young married ones, in relating to their parents. You young married ones look at us with our gray hair, and we're out of touch with life. We can't run the computer the way we should. We're dense, and I get my son to help me. I have sons-in-laws that help me. I'm thankful for them because I'd get lost in the shuffle. You're in there banging around. You don't know what you're doing. So that means we're dumb and stupid, okay? C.S. Lewis calls it chronological snobbery. And every generation does it. They look at the old people. They're just out of touch. They're not... And you have to admit that there have been advances. I mean, I can tell that story of Abner Kaufman trying to drive a stick shift. I mean, he was used to a horse and buggy. But anyhow, you know, but there's one thing we do have as old people. You know what we have? We have history. I have much more history than you young people have. I was born in 1955. I went through a horrible, what I call the Mennonite divide. Some of you aren't from Mennonites, but we had in the late 60s, or let's say, I don't know where it started, but 65 to 75, shoom. Do you mind what I mean? Have you ever read Uncle Dale? Uncle Dale and God has all to do about that whole divide. And I was 13 years old when our divide came, okay? And it, at that time, the excitement, what was happening, the new wine, the excitement was with that group, not ours. We were dead. But I'm so thankful that I was in that dead traditional church. Do you know where you'll be 30 years from now? I know where I'll be. I won't be here. Do you know where you'll be 30 years from now? It's a serious question. Think well of it. And when your grandparents come to you and say, listen, I have a concern. Can you feel their pain? They don't want you going out into the world. They don't want you throwing off this valuable culture that you have, this valuable truth. They see the dresses getting shorter. What's happening? They see the covering sliding off and disappearing. What's happening? Why? Please. We have history. We've seen this. We've seen many of our peers throw it away and go. Gone. They were going for something better. There's nothing out there. You don't want anything out there. It'll chew you up and spit you out. It'll be cruel to you. Listen, I got gray hair. I can tell you this. If you don't follow Christ and you don't yield totally to Him, it's going to do you in. All right, for young married ones, if you feel like mom, grandparents are oppressive on you, tell them. Okay? Talk to them. They maybe don't even know they're being oppressive. Maybe they don't know that they're fussing about your garden and your flowers and your cooking and all that. Tell them. There was a story. I'm about done. There was a story Frank Reed shared. I didn't have to say it, but anyhow. Let me back up. Forget Frank Reed. Yeah, he told the story. There was a mother. She was like 70 couple years old. And she had a son that was 50-some years old. And when he would go to visit her, he didn't even like to go visit her because she monopolized the conversation. I hope nobody here knows who I'm talking about. This is a story. And he would walk in there, and she'd start talking, just talking. And she controlled the whole conversation. Some people can talk. I mean, they can talk about nothing, on and on and on and on. And she controlled him. And well, it was Frank told him, you go in, when she starts talking, you just lay your hands on her shoulder. Say, now, mother, we're going to talk about what I want to talk about tonight. Sometimes you just have to, I mean, you're mature, right? You young Marys are mature. You just have to tell mom and dad, no, we're not doing that. And you can just say, no, dad, I have my home, and I don't think it's disrespectful. And it's wonderful that children worry about being disrespectful to mom and dad. But when it's oppressive, when it's bearing down on you, there's nothing wrong with saying, listen, we have our home. We're trying to find our way. Just can you just back off? Is that okay? I think so. And I don't know if mom and dad are still at you. That's a sad situation if mom and dad can't just, okay, back off. And if, you know, so, all right. I think I'll... I'll stop there. Again, I plead with you, build godly values in your children, godly values in your own heart and life and soul, and the oil of forgiveness, the oil of love can reduce the friction and again, purpose in your heart that you want to have that relationship. You want your children to love the Lord, and you want to love the Lord, and that relationship will happen. Any questions, comments that you have, testimonies?
Yeah, thinking about what we're facing today in contrast to when you raised your children, because you're 11 down, two to go. You know, what should we be doing differently than what you did?
What do you mean by what?
Well, you had different, you dealt with different things. We're dealing with different dynamics in our generation than you did.
It's an ongoing process. Do you want me to really tell you?
Sure.
Throw the cell phones out. Don't let them on the internet. A society is saying it's wrecking our families. It's wrecking our children. It's wrecking our relationships. I was thinking about this the other day. Who was that Pied Piper that played the music and to take the mice and the rats out of the town? And all the children were going after him. And I thought, that's what's happening. He's playing. The devil is playing his music, and they're all going after him. It's an ongoing thing to face the difficulties of our time. And again, it's moral issues, it's money issues, and it's position, pride of life. Those issues are right there on that thing. And it would be a long spill, but I think the church needs to take some positions on some of these things and say, you know, I said about wanting them to take it themselves. A 17-year-old, an 18-year-old can't handle a cell phone by himself without any block on it. He can't do it. I was 17, 18. Maybe they're stronger these days than I was. I don't think I could have handled that. I couldn't have. And I think if we would be honest about who we are, Maybe at 70, I couldn't handle it either. You know, I'm not going to be arrogant and say, "Yeah, I can handle it." We have blocks on our internet, and I don't know if that's helpful in what you're saying. And
but what have your children commented most on what they experienced in your home?
What
has your children commented most on what they've experienced in your home? Like, what was positive?
I didn't move. I was second born. I got to develop this horrible stubbornness in me that I didn't move. What would they say? I had a good wife. That was
that's my excuse too.
I give her a lot of credit for where our children are. Okay, let's say it. She won't like me to say this, but I would have released our children a whole lot sooner to their own thinking. If I could draw, I don't have. That release, we read Fugate, Child Training, and parents releasing them to their own decision at 8, 9 years old. They're not ready to be released. Cramp down on that. I mean, there is a place of, you got 25-year-olds that are still listening to instructions and they can't do anything on their own. You don't want that. But don't release them too soon to their own decision. Control them. That has been big in my mind and in my family. They'll grow up soon enough. The philosophy is they need to blossom and they need to bloom, these little four-year-olds. You know what society is doing, and I don't know what all is recorded here, but they're asking whether they want to be a boy or a girl. Now, dumb. They can't make those decisions. That's how strange society has gone with their philosophies. That would be one thing that I really emphasize there.
Yeah, I have one more question. So if I would ask your children, what would they say anchored them the most as youth in your home, other than you being stubborn?
Okay. I was given a topic about teaching your children the facts of life, and I miserably failed in that whole thing. But my wife said one thing I did not allow was immodest running around in the home. Some people think in their home they can run around half naked. No. And some people feel like there's a difference between going swimming and at home. I never caught the thing of going swimming in skimpy clothes. And they say, oh, it's his family. No. Modesty was a big thing with me. I wanted modesty in our home. And it just alarms me when these trends, the dress hems are going up. Back in my time, back in the 60s, remember there? And the dresses were way too short. And we fought hard to get them down where they belong. And I grew up and it was always mid-calf, and mid-calf was whatever. And then in society, the trend went longer, and that helped a little bit, maybe. We got dresses long like we wanted to. I was so pleased with that. Now it seems like I'm just talking off the cuff here. It seems like necklines want to slide down, too. And it seems like the trend is the dresses are coming up. And I told my brother in the church, are you with me? We're not letting them come up. It's just the attraction of the world. See, that has to do with moral purity again. Young ladies, you know, you want to be morally pure for your husband. I don't know if I'm answering your question. The internet thing is a heavy issue. TikTok, at our church, we don't allow social media. We wrestled with WhatsApp a little bit, but we do have that. But social media, and all that, what I read is that youth are emotionally burned out. Suicide is on the increase. TikTok, all that stuff. Our position on videos has been, this was a statement from years ago, it didn't originate with me, moving pictures are bewitching. They captivate you. And I just listened to a sermon, Amusing Ourselves to Death. And they teach you things with amusement that are wrong. They teach you stuff that is just dead wrong. And so.
Okay. I had a question there. We're talking about releasing our young people. My question is, you know, as children are teenagers, you give clear direction and you expect obedience, and rightfully so. What if your children, let's say they're 20 to 25, 28, living at home with you, do you release them if their convictions are a bit different? Or sometimes I hear parents say, well, you're under my roof, you're going to do it my way, and you know, make it a clear cut even if they're 24, 5, 6, or 8, or 30. Do you differential that a little bit, or no. Do you...
I'm the boss in my home. and if someone gets up to 21, 25, we develop a different kind of relationship. And I don't know if I should say it or not, but is this recorded yet? Okay. We were going to take... Bibby and I and the two children aren't married, a picture for the church calendar. And my son, he didn't really want to, he's 37, he didn't really want to take pictures anyhow. And he needed to go change his clothes. And I said, go change your clothes. And so he's 37 and I still. But we have a total different relationship at 37 years old. We talk about things and we converse. If an older person feels like he's still being papa and still being mama, he's going to resent that, and that he should. We don't want to be nitpicking, but I don't know if that answers the question or not. Some people think once they're 21, do what you want to. I don't care. And
so you wouldn't give them more grace at making their own decisions between 21 and 30 as you would 16?
By that time,
a little bit?
By the time they're 21, 22, I pretty much released them, although Have I released them? Let them go. Okay, that's a good point. We do not like, I'm glad he's still happy to live at home, okay? Mm-hmm. We don't like them out on their own. When a man gets married, his wife is a bit of an accountability partner. You have that accountability back and forth. I don't like to see young men, 20, 25, living in an apartment by themselves. It's not healthy. I'm glad he's... See, that I feel good about our relationship and that he's willing to stay there. And so, you know, that's part of it. So.
What would your advice be if you've got your son, your daughter gets married, and obviously there's going to be changes, they're adjusting to a new home, but you start seeing things that you're not comfortable with, maybe the way they spend their money, their time. You're seeing stuff. What's the best way to relate to them so that you're not looking like a meddling parent and yet you're trying to help?
Right. Yeah, I don't know. In other words, let's just be plain. They're going to a more liberal church, okay? That's heaviness. That's hard. We haven't faced that. Well, again, it's going to be a little more what kind of personality you are. I'm not a bold in your face personality. I don't probably could be a little bolder. We have concerns sometimes. Say this money issue still grips us, and we see a son or a son-in-law breaking in too much money. It's going to destroy him. That's been a theme of mine, and don't quite know how to handle all that. Their finances are their own business, and yeah. I don't have a good answer for that. I'd be concerned, and then again, hopefully you have some capital, a good enough relationship that you can maybe quietly drop hints. One brother said there is more truth spoken in jest than in real. Sometimes you don't want to be right up front and you sort of jesting and say, hey, this is, you know, and that's not healthy either. They need to know a little bit what you think. In my mind, I would say I'm not happy with this decision that you're making. You know, and then one of the things that all of us have, but old people, maybe it's our generation too, it's hard to, the word is articulate our thinking and tell them why I think this is not a healthy move for you. But if you can develop that ability to communicate to them and say, do you see what's happening in that congregation? Do you see the drift that's happening? Can you see where it's headed for? Brother Edsel says that one group, they don't think like Mennonites. Mennonites think linear. Do you ever hear that? Linear thinking is if you do this, this will happen. If you do that, this will happen. That's linear thinking. And if you can convince them of linear thinking, some of our linear thinking is wacko, but that's important. Do you see what direction? Trajectory. That's a word that's important to me. Can you see the trajectory of that congregation? It's scary.
So I had a question along with that. Do you expect, how did you go about putting the expectation of your children staying in the church that you're in? Was that always kind of a expectation that they'll stay part of your church, and how did you go about doing that, maybe?
Never. I never forced occupation on them. I never forced church on them. My whole goal was to convince them that our church was the best there was. And this was right. See, I say, I need to be right I need to have them. One of the things that, I don't know, some things, they just, I don't know. When my son, he bought a Lawn Boy lawnmower, because we had one of them at home. You know, yeah. He loved what happened at home. I got them all buying Toyota vehicles, because they're the best, you know. And that's not eternal. But if you as a dad have their respect, and you as a dad have convinced them that the truth is here. No, I don't, I had a neighbor man, and my dad was not heavy-handed. He had 13 children, and that just reminds me of another story. There was a fellow that we were working with from the prison, and he was riding with me, and I was trying to help him, and I was bossing him. He said, "Wilmer, you had too many children. You think I'm one of them?" He said, "If you have 13 children, you have to hold a steady hand on them." But I don't think I was a heavy-handed father. I don't think I was. And so you have to convince them. If they don't follow what you've taught them, there's not much you can do on that whole thing. And then a son or a daughter gets in the mix of another daughter-in-law or son-in-law, and that's a whole different dynamic too. And I did learn this. If your son or daughter, let's say your daughter, I had 8 daughters, and that scared me to let them go for a young man, and I had to let them go. If their heart and their mind is where it should be, they will accept a man that is where he should be. I learned that because that one young man, I said to one of the girls, "You know, this is a nice young man." This is one of my first daughters. I stayed out of the dating business, courting business after that. They said, "No, Dad, you don't know him. You don't want him." Okay? I was winning. I'll tell you what. When we left, I'm sorry if I'm keeping you long, if you want to go, but when we left our conservative Mennonite, I was scared. I was scared because the bishop told me, "You're going to lose all your children to the world." Now, wouldn't that scare you? This is the devil's web getting you out of the Mennonite church, and I didn't know I was getting out of the Mennonite church. I still claim I'm a Mennonite, okay? Is that all right? I'm a Mennonite. But no, I gave it to the Lord, and I focused, again, the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eye, and the pride of life. I'm sorry if I'm a broken record, but that was foundational in what I was aiming for. I'm not telling you here tonight that I have, you know, totally conquered every thought in my mind on the lust of flesh, or that there's never a covetous thought in my mind, or there's never a sense of pride of who I am. I'm battling that, okay? That is just life. That's the world, and I want nothing to do with it. I still credit that teaching to have gotten me where I'm at today, and I still have room to grow. Passion, possession, and position. That was Brother John Martin's teaching to me. That's been my anchor for my family and for my children. And again, fear, where it's all going to turn out. I think of David, God has brought me into a large place. And I don't think it was any of my goodness. It was the grace of God. Every time one of my children gave their heart to the Lord, I knew it wasn't because of me. It was the goodness of God. It was His mercy and His grace upon my life. And I give thanks to, I give all the credit to God for where I'm at, for the relationship I have with my children. I don't claim any goodness. I give it to my wife. She was my strength. Any other questions? Okay.